Welcome, everyone, to the Cup of Coffee podcast with me, your host, Tom Dillon. This is being recorded live at our weekly online meeting and broadcast around the world. Today's topic is how to make money out of sourcing with Jay Puddy. When I emailed him to ask him how I should refer to him, he instructed me to call him Wing Commander, which is what we're going to stick with for the remainder of today. Before we start, I'd just like to say by way of a disclaimer that today is a wonderful discussion, but that nothing said here constitutes financial advice, and you should always take professional advice before investing your hard-earned cash. There may be the odd unplanned swear word along the way as well. The format for today is, as usual, that Jay will speak to us for a while, and then we'll take some questions from the floor, so get those ready as we go through. Jay Puddy is a serial entrepreneur who started his first mobile technology company at the age of 23 and sold it 8 years later. Jay started his property journey by buying rundown properties across Greater Manchester, adding value to them through refurbishments and tenanting them to provide himself and his family with a passive income and a future pension. After building a multi-million pound portfolio, his attention turned to the lack of professional property management companies available. With the help of his wife, Charlotte, he helped to build Abode Property Management Limited, which is a Google-rated five-star letting agency in Greater Manchester, managing over 450 properties. In 2018, he teamed up with Christian Ribeiro to create Performance Property Group, which focuses on helping sportsmen build property portfolios so that when they retire, they have an income to fall back on whilst they consider their next career. With a passion for helping others on their property journey, Jay also runs the Stockport Property Expert blog to share his experiences, knowledge, and expertise on buy-to-let investing. That's the longest bio I've ever done, which must mean you've achieved a lot of things, Mr. Puddy. Sorry, Wing Commander.
Yeah, well, I've done it for a long time now, Tom, isn't it? 20 years it will be in next year.
Does your bio just get longer as you do more stuff? Is that how it works? You just add more stuff. I guess so. You experience more things, right?
Yeah, I can't give anything up. I have to keep on so it keeps on going.
Well, yeah,
keep on adding and finding better ways to systemize it and to find another hour in the day.
I was going to say, do you not find yourself getting a bit busy with that, or is that what you're about to talk to us about?
Yeah, I'm really busy. I'm the busiest I've ever been at the moment, but I'm enjoying it, so I don't mind it at this stage of my life.
Well, that's good.
But I think the busyness is also because I've put two kids of 5 and 3 boys on top of what was already quite a busy lifestyle. Mm. And that just seems to have exponentially grown my busyness.
The thing that surprises me about that is that when people tell me that, they sound surprised. Like, I don't have kids, but when I spend any time with kids, I go, oh, well, these seem like they're going to take up a lot of my time. If I had one of these myself, this would definitely take up all of my time. And then people go, wow, it's amazing. I've had kids and now I've got no time. Really? Like, Kel surprise.
When I got the first one, I knew before I walked into it that basically it was going to ruin my social life. That was, I went in eyes open. And yeah, it did. But you don't give up your social life, do you? You just try, then you try and do your social life, your work, and your kids. And then when you get the second one, it's like, right, one of those has to give. Well, I can't give my kids away. And obviously, I need work because I need to make sure that we've still got a roof over our head. Mm. So kind of the social life starts to get hit. And then you get a bit older, and then basically your hangovers get worse, and you realize you can't do a hangover and kids at the same time. And before you know it, you're reduced down to a real boring workaholic with my wife.
Well, thanks for coming, everyone. I hope that's been a good uplifting message for everyone Saturday morning. I hope you enjoyed as much as I have. Enjoy the rest of the day with your kids. So, I'm not sure how you're going to back that up, but have you got anything props related for us?
Oh, dear. Oh, yeah. But they're great. They're great. Everyone should have them.
Yeah, yeah. We should say that in case they listen back. Yeah, good thinking. Yeah.
About sourcing, I suppose. We better talk about some property, haven't we, Tom? So what I thought I would do is give you an overview of just about the property companies that I run or work with other partners, and put some numbers in there so there's actually some context of, do you mean you can judge me on what we've been doing or the size of them, and then you can put in your mind whereabouts that sits in your head, and then basically maybe just give you some insights of what I've learned over the last 20 years of how to run that many companies and also run them quite well or make money at least, and then try and tie that back into what give examples of the sourcing part of how that ties into sourcing. Is that kind? Is that sits well with you? Okay. Okay. So I think Tom mentioned a few of them, but first off, at the start of the pipeline, we've got Performance Property Group, which is we build portfolios for a few footballers. So very niche, very targeted, and essentially we do some flips in there, and we also buy some apartment blocks to hold for the long term. And I have a business partner who's an ex-footballer called Christian Ribeiro that I work with every day. Then if you move down one chunk of the pipeline of the pipeline I'm talking about is basically sourcing properties to renting them out and managing them. So the start, you're sourcing them in Performance Property Group. I've just realized, Tom, that all my companies have a P in them.
Right.
And my surname is Puddy. And I'm thinking, oh my God, these people are going to be at the end with Seth's with P. Performance Property Group. And there's Performance Property Group loans. Oh God. That basically we raise private finance from high net worth individuals to fund these properties we sourced for the footballers so we can buy them cash. So we don't ever buy on a mortgage. We always buy cash because they're usually run down, dilapidated, loads of problems properties. So we raise money on there. Then on the next stage of the pipeline, we have Performance Property Group project management. And that basically handles all the refurbs and everything to do with adding value to properties. So mini developments, as in extending houses, full refurbs inside, subsidence, all the problems that you can associate with properties we fix. And then from there, we've got Abode, actually doesn't have a P, Abode Property Management. So there's a P in there. So that as Tom said, that we've got 450 properties now we manage across the greater Manchester. Started that from manage my own properties, and also we work with another business partner in there called Tracy as well, Tracy Wardle. And then from there, on the end of it is, well, that's the actual the management, but the other company that I'm involved in property is my own portfolio, which is called P&M Property. So another P. And we bought that portfolio we individually sourced properties via leafleting through agents and through other sources in 2008, 9 and 10 to build a portfolio for ourselves and our pension, as Tom's already mentioned. So that's the overview, that's the pipeline. So basically we source, we fund, we refurb, add value, we tenant, we manage, and then we hold. And in there, we've got a few flips as well. So to put into context of, to make sure you kind of know that I know what I'm talking about, hopefully, or you can say, oh, well, that's not very good. Do you mean I could have done a lot better than fair enough? Like for Performance Property Group, we started in 2019 from a standing start, and we did 7 properties that year. We did 13 properties in 2020, and we've got 7 properties either started or in legals as of 2021. So we're gradually growing to our target of 20 properties a year. And that's for the building that for the footballers. So far we've spent of their money and our own money for the flips, £3 million purchased, but they're now worth £5.5 million from either revaluations of mortgages or basically our market research of what they are when we do our numbers at the start. So we're in the PPG loans part, we've raised 2.7 million of private finance to buy those properties. In the project management, we've carried out about £500,000 worth of actual refurbs. We've got 10 projects currently on the go, 6 in the pipeline about to start. So that's a really time heavy or time sucking company because of all the ins and outs. There's just so many wheels and cogs within a refurbishment that just has to be systemized, managed, problems, everything. But if you don't do a refurb and you don't do it well and you don't know what you're doing, then this is probably the biggest amount of money you're going to spend in property and the biggest amount of problems you're going to get if you don't do it correctly. And then we've got Abode, as we said, we've got an eight employees there, and we've got a 5-star Google rating and managed a lot of properties. And then P&M properties, we built up a portfolio of 41 in a couple of years, properties that we hold and manage. So that kind of gives you hopefully some context about the pipeline of what we do. And also, as you might imagine, you might be thinking he's a bit of a control freak. And that is 100% correct, because what you don't ever hear, or maybe you do hear, is that in 20 years, I've made so many mistakes that by the time that you add up all those mistakes, some of them are hilarious, some of them are life-changing, but you learn your most from your mistakes. When you actually, one of the mistakes I made a few years ago was I wasn't in control of the pipeline. So I wasn't in control of the sourcing. And that essentially is where your whole business starts, isn't it? If you can't source a property, then you've got no business. And so that was really important. I didn't have that element. I had the people with the money. I had sources that I could get the deals. But then when I wasn't controlling it, things were falling out of bed. So I was like, right, we need to add that stage. We need to add a company to that stage of the pipeline to make sure our company always has leads or always has properties to fill the pipeline to then go along the rest and fill up the rest of the companies. So, the problem I had was I had a sourcer that basically, in 2020, even though we started building a company to source properties, 90% of our sourcing was through agents because they have the majority of the stock. So if you want to be a sourcer, then a lot of your properties will probably end up coming from people that are through estate agents, because they're already, they're motivated to sell. You know they're motivated, they're on the market. And then basically one of our biggest agents that we bought 7 of the 13 properties out in 2020 changed their strategy, where anything that needed a full refurb, which was the only properties we could really buy and add value in that in a rising market, put them all into auction. So overnight, our pipeline was just almost cut off, I suppose. And so we needed to build relationships with other agents to refill it. We changed what we did. We made sure we had much more direct marketing. We got creative about who maybe knows a landlord, who maybe has a landlord that wants to sell, who lots of different things we thought about and then put into action to try and get to fill the pipeline, basically. So what's the some insights, I suppose, into how to create that pipeline or create those companies and how to do it well or successful and make sure you're not wasting your time. I think the biggest thing is people. It's got to be number one, because you're not going to buy or sell, or if you haven't got a person, then you're probably not going to be able to sell anything to anybody. If you don't partner with the right people, then you're not going to be able to do everything on your own. Well, you might be able to, but you're not going to be able to have 5 companies all at the different stages if you try to do it all on your own. You'd probably go mad or you do it badly, one of the others. So you've got to find the right partners to work with, essentially, the right personalities. So you want long-term relationships. You've got to like them. You've got to get on with them. You've got to enjoy their company. And then you want to make sure they don't have the same skill set as you. So I'm quite system orientated. I'm quite detailed, quite focused. But I like starting things. My consistency isn't as good as what you could be. So for instance, when I partner with Christian in the sourcing thing, he's almost a footballer, is almost like a soldier, I imagine. I mean, every day they go into training, every day they do exactly the same thing, every day. You to be a sportsman, you need to be able to handle boredom. You know, boredom is probably you're doing the same thing over and over and over and again. And then once a week you get to do something where It's on a game pitch where you're not quite sure what the opposition are going to do. Rest of it's all training. So he's really good at consistency and persistence of doing the same thing. And then if you add in my focus and targeted and systems on top of that and bring it and keep it all in, make sure that shiny penny syndrome doesn't happen, and you look left, you look right, and you keep focus on the same line, then that partner in that company works really, really well. And one of my partners in a tech company, he's 10 years older than me. It's like a big brother now. It's almost like a mentor, which I would suggest is a extremely good thing to have. And one of his sayings about people is, I mean, he's not always that PC, so bear with me. It's about, like, when you hire somebody, if it's better to have a hole in your company than an arsehole, because the amount of time that will take and drag and disrupt the team and everything like that. So, and you can't be successful without people. You know, you just can't grow without people. You can't have a business. I mean, I'd love it in a way, because of my background is technology and I'm a techie at heart kind of thing. I'd love it if that wasn't the case, because, do you mean, technology, you can scale really fast. It works weekends, it works 24/7, 365 days a week, and it never moans. It just keeps on going. But that's not life. And also, it would be pretty boring if it was just all about tech. But the next pillar, I suppose, I always look out or always is taking action. So when I started, out in 2003, I just take action, and I'd probably go like a bull in a china shop. If you fast forward to 2019, when we started Performance Property Group, I took action, but I made sure it was focused, like really focused action. I made sure that it was considered, that it was, everything was prepped. So before we even, to tie that into sourcing, before we even went to meet an agent and said, I want a property that's, I want to add value, have you got anything with margin in? You know what I mean? All the things that usual people go, then we made sure that basically we knew exactly what we wanted, and it was focused. I mean, it was targeted, it was a niche. We knew exactly the price range we wanted it to be between. We knew exactly the areas that we knew that we wanted it to be in. And we knew exactly the offering that we were going to give them, the promises we were going to make to them, and how we wanted to deliver it. We went through it, we practiced it, we made sure we could offer within 24 hours if someone gave us a, we went through all the systems, we went through the PDF we were going to give them before we even walked into that first estate agents. Now, everybody's always saying, take action, take action, take action. But at the end of the day, is one of my biggest learns is, yeah, take action, but make sure you've done lots of prep before you take action, and you know what you're doing, and you know that you can deliver when you say. Because if you can imagine how many people go into an estate agent and ask for a property for an investment, they must get it every single day, mustn't they? Every single day. And they, when you build a relationship with the estate agents, they will, if you ask them that question, they will always laugh and go, yeah, we thought you were another one of those idiots that were coming in, asking for a property, here today, gone tomorrow, never to be seen again. So that's a major thing. You get one chance to make a first impression. Make sure you deliver on it. And that's, I suppose I mentioned that in the last bit, is another huge pillar of what I build a business around is focus. So your target, find a niche and own it. Don't try and be something to everyone. Be amazing to just a couple of people or a few people, and it'll pay dividends. And once you've owned that niche, then go on to the next one, and then go on to the next one. Do you know what I mean? But make sure it's make sure you start small and focused and targeted. What's the other? The other thing, I've only got a couple more, so I won't bore you much longer. But the other things that I've got is consistency and persistence is probably the main ones, because without them, you don't learn anything. You don't work out what you need to do, because if you knew nothing when you started something new, then that would be the best thing. Until you actually get in and do it and try it and review it and analyze it and work out what went wrong, that's when it starts to get momentum. And you're not going to do that unless you're consistently doing it. And then persistence keeps you going through those times where you go, do you know what? I've had enough. So when I started my first business, I think it took 5 years or four and a bit years of working in the pub four or five nights a week, working programming every single day. And then I was working for the Pricely full profit for 4 years or so. It wasn't my first year, but by the time I got to 4 years, I think I was making this grand sum of £12,000 a year profit, which is for working that hard was terrible. And that's, in fact, that's how I actually got into property, because after the fourth year of doing it, I was like in tech, I was like, do you know what? I might need another job here. So I looked into property in 2007 with, if anyone remembers, Inside Track, who Jim Rowan, Jim somebody, who had to run away to Spain and got caught with his hand in the till. But anyway, but that, and then after, just as that happened, I rewrote the program once or twice more. And guess what? I got one customer and that 12 grand went to 35 grand. And I thought, I made it. But it was, it's 4 years of slog that was. So the persistence is absolutely key. So that leads me on to one of the other things that I don't do now, whereas I used to set myself goals, and I probably, because I was inexperienced, you set yourself a goal of like a year, and a year flies by. I mean, now I don't have so many goals. I enjoy the process, which is the main thing. I love learning, and I give myself as long as it takes. So I give myself the time. So I set 5 years. If when we started out doing the performance property group, obviously we got targets for year one, targets for year two in sourcing. So some of those targets would be, right, well, we had to get 16 out. To get one property, we've got to have 20 offers out a week. To get 20 offers, we've got to look at 100 properties a month. And so it all works down back in numbers, but to be successful, to be to get where we really wanted to do, then it was a 5 year. You've got to let these things evolve and take time, and you have to learn every day, and you have to review it and then work out where you went wrong, what you did good, what you could have done better, and then try and improve it. And then a big one for me is consistency, and persistence also comes, you've got so much technology out there these days that can leverage that. I mean, there's so much that you can automate. There's so much that you can do, set reminders to bring you back in, like weekly meetings, monthly meetings, review targets, review numbers, and see where you are. And of course, you're going to stray off the path. You're not going to hit 20 offers every month, you know what I mean? But if you did 10 and then the next month you're like, right, we didn't hit it, what can I do? It refocuses your mind, and then you can go again, and you keep on bringing yourself back, because nothing goes in a straight line. It's a zigzag. It's just about making sure the zags aren't that zaggy, and you're just like zig, 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 rather than zig, zag, zig, zag, all over the shop. And also let things evolve, because when we started PPG, or when we started sourcing, what you're sourcing from the start is, right, we're really, really targeted. It's two bed terraces in this area. And then from now it's, okay, well, we've owned that niche. Now we're actually targeting apartment blocks in this area, because we've built the contacts, we've built the knowledge, you've got the teams, you've got the right domain, and that grows over time. So what was your goals 2 years ago is probably not going to be your goals in the next in 5 years time. So yeah. And the last one, Tom, so the last one, I promise, is focus on what you can control. So for instance, a lot of people ask about the market. Yes, the market's important, but at the end of the day, is 90% of your success comes from what you do every day in your business, not what the market's doing. You should be able to create a deal you should be able to get a deal that doesn't matter if the market goes up, down, left, right, sideways, flips over, does a back somersault. It's fine because it's a deal that stacks in any market. So don't wait to buy property. Buy property and wait and let time do the heavy lifting. Just make sure you buy good at the start. I think that's about it. How long did I do?
I don't know. I'm not counting. But the good news
more than 45 seconds.
It's ideal. We got a good portion of time for questions. I like the way you'd finished. I thought finish strong. I always say, and you finish with buy good at the start. So excellent stuff there. Something for us all to take away.
I'm not going to be an orator or.
Yeah, you never claimed to be a poet laureate, did you? But no, excellent stuff. Dilapidation. How do you go about pronouncing that?
I don't even know what it means, Tom.
excellent stuff. I think we should kick off. If it's not, I think we're allowed to do this with your Bitcoin story. You know when you nearly bought Bitcoin.
This
made me laugh. So, I'll start and you can finish off, which is Jay told me this one earlier where when he was looking up to sell his company, as you mentioned, and had a few coins kicking around and paid off a few bits, still had a little bit of money left over and just considered, well, fairly seriously considered buying Bitcoin. This was back in the day when there was no exchanges or any of that, really early days of Bitcoin. And so you had to, if you think it's dodgy now, it was pretty dodgy, really even more dodgy then. But he thought, this might go somewhere. And so he nearly bought, I think I'm right saying, £10,000 of the Bitcoin.
Yeah, I just sold my business, hadn't I? So I was like, oh yeah, I've got some spare money. I put 10 grand into the Bitcoin.
Yeah. And if you had, and apparently you had your finger over the button, didn't you, Mark? Yes, please. And if you had pressed that button, what would that Bitcoin be worth now?
£5 billion.
So if you think you're having a bad day, maybe you've made a loss or maybe not done, quite reached the levels you thought you might have reached. Have a think for Jay, who I think so relatively good spirits, because that was me. I wouldn't be here. I'd be at the bottom of a canal somewhere. So fair play.
But Tom, if I'd done that, I wouldn't have been here with you today, would I?
yeah, Christ. I think that makes it worse. But anyway, right, good. On to non-Bitcoin stories. Sourcing, first of all, is of interest to a lot of people here, whether they're whichever end of the thing they're on. And anyway, a lot of these learnings that you've helped us with, I think, apply to whether you're a sourcer or not, apply to whether, you can be a landlord or whatever reason you're buying. Because sourcing, essentially, if you're a property investor, all you are is a sourcer, it only works for yourself, isn't it? So a lot of the skills are, cross over. I think something that you mentioned a few times, by the way, I'll ask a few questions and then we'll get onto the ones in the chat. So if you have any questions, then pop them in and we'll get onto them. A theme that came up a few times is that you almost choose to work with only a few people, like less is more, whether that's investors or clients or whatever. Have I got that right? And if so, what's the rationale for that?
Well, so there's two ways of, I suppose, if you wanted just to focus on a sourcing company, there's two methods, isn't there? There's one is you go out and you try and find the properties. You have a big list of investors. You email that list when you've got a property. First come, first serve gets to reserve that property. And you've got they sign up to your website, or you just have a big mailing list, essentially, of people that are interested in buying property. It's really unpersonal. It's really, it's not the way I want to do it. It's quite... low margin, high volume. You've got to do a lot of deals, and you've got to, you're not offering a very good, well, you might be offering a very good service. You're not offering much of a service. Let's put it that way. You're offering the sourcing part, but you're not offering much. And they just, you send out the numbers, either someone likes it or someone doesn't. Now, one of the main reasons that I was against that way of sourcing, or a sourcing company, was because when I spoke to somebody else in the industry that had that sort of company, he said when 2008, 9 and 10 came, that literally his list was worth nothing. So even if, can you imagine, I bought my portfolio in 2008, 9 and 10. There wasn't a better time in the last 20 years to buy a portfolio or to buy properties than 2008, 9 and 10. Now, if you're a sourcing company and you can't sell the best deals in and all your own, and his list was basically no one wanted to buy a deal because everyone ran for the hills, everyone was scared, then you've got no business again. So I learned, I took that, and that, do you mean that resonated in my mind massively. And so when I was starting a sourcing company with Christian, before I even met Christian, if I was going to do it, it was only going to be to a few people that basically bought into who I was or who we were, also had trusted us, I mean, implicitly, also would be protected in a crash so that basically their money wouldn't dry up if we had another crash, and actually would be, I mean, with through education and speaking to us, and also from, I mean, don't do what I say, do what I, oh, go on, Tommy, help me out with these sayings. Yeah. You know, I see what I've done. So just taking look, this is what I did. I just did it 10 years before you, and look at the value and the equity that I've made in the last 10 years on this portfolio and the income I've had. Do you mean, I've got the numbers for you. Build the trust and do you mean, who wants to work with 100 people? I mean, if anybody's ever worked with the public, you know, some can be infuriating, some can be amazing, and some can be neither here nor there, and a lot can let you down. So I prefer to build really strong, tight relationships with a few people rather than building a lot. And that way, I've always got people that want to buy properties.
Yeah, when I arrived at my first gig to do speaking about property, the host, who will remain nameless, said to me, you know, with public speaking, the problem isn't so much the speaking, it's the public. by which I mean all of you. No, I don't really. It's magic every show. But yeah, okay, great stuff. And I think it's interesting because some people do choose to go wide, if you like, to target 1,000 people, and some people choose to go narrow. And I'm always fascinated on the reasons why, and I think you've answered it for you really well. So I think this relates to one of the questions in the chat, so we might do a 2-for-1 here. Someone was essentially asking about Ant says, great talk. On the funding, is it a collective pot like an investment fund, or do the individuals own and fund individual properties? And my question was sort of linked, which was that you've raised a lot of private finance by the sounds of it, and how did you go about doing that? Because that must be one of the most common questions I get.
So the properties are all held, there's no fund, not FCA regulated, but the properties are all basically owned by the players or the players' companies. So the people that we source for own those properties. And then essentially what will happen is, let's say, because not all, we don't work with that many Premiership players, and we don't work with that many players. We keep it, I think we've got 9 or 10 at the moment, and they're usually in the Championship. So we're not talking like mega millions in the bank. If you've got, and each one of our properties must cost between, if you do the deposit, and there's some big refurbs that we have to do because of the market at the moment, they could be 50 to 70 grand in a deal, and then we remortgage it later on down the line. Now, that means they could only do, if they bought it all cash and the refurb and everything, they might only do one a year. And obviously we need to leverage their pot so they can do 3 a year. Let's say that's their thing. And so basically we raise private finance for them. So it's almost like if you went to, I don't want to mention any names now to give them any business, but if you went to a bridging company, they'd loan you the 75% and you pay the fees and you pay the, well, 10 or 11% per annum, how long you had that loan for. Well, and you can buy the property cash then. We started to do it in that way when we started the sourcing company, and we wanted to build a relationship with one of those companies, because essentially, I mean, they've got more money than we could ever spend. So we want, that's the route we went down. We were doing bridging with a couple of companies, and it just took too long. The players weren't, I mean, it was too labor intensive for the players. It was too complicated. It was too slow. That was the main thing. So we thought, you know what, there's a better way of doing this. We'll just do exactly the same. We'll buy cash, we'll raise the finance, but we'll go to the people that we know, start with friends and family, and made sure that, and then it's like super quick. But still, if you have the right legal team and documents in place, so we wouldn't ever loan any money of anybody we knew, even family, friends, or person that I don't even know. I would never ever want the responsibility of having them come to me saying, you've lost my money. So basically what we do is we make sure that if one of our private lenders loans, he has a first charge against a property that's worth 75% less than 25% less. He's got a 25% equity cushion in there. So the market's got to go down 25% before his capital's even touched. He's got a first charge like a bank requires. So the property's basically his, the lender, until he's paid back. He gets 10% per annum, so the same as a bridging company would. And he also gets a personal guarantee from somebody who's earning like 10 grand a week. So they've got plenty of assets if you needed to go and actually execute the agreement, which is all signed by solicitors, all those documents. And so that's how we fund it, basically. So it's quite friends and family and some private lenders that we have. They have a really good deal out of it, because not only that, they trust us with the money. The players trust us with what we're doing, because we are lucky enough to control the whole pipeline. So, I mean, we're advising the players what to buy, how to buy it, and also refurbing it for them, remortgaging it for them, tenanting it for them, and then so that then the lenders get their money back once it's remortgaged. So they're probably loaning for about 8 to 9 months at the moment on each deal.
Cool. You mentioned refurbs, and you mentioned just then that some of them were quite big refurbs, and you mentioned in your talk that that there's perhaps some of the most difficult or certainly most time consuming parts of what you do, or your company does. So could you touch on that? Are you working to systematize those, and is it just that it's difficult to systematize, or is it that you haven't got around to systematizing those yet, or is it
no,
a lot of moving parts?
I have and it is, I mean, if I put my geeky hat on, I'm quite proud of the Google sheet that I've created that basically draws everything from one bit. And so imagine, let's start again, actually. So imagine, so basically the way I've systemized it is you go to a property, I've got a scope of works, okay? That scope of works for every room has the measurements, you put in the measurements of the room. You've got a list of stage 1 to stage 9. Within those stages, you've got stage 1, demolition, damp remediation. Stage 2, first fix lecky, first fix plumbing, remove electrics. Stage 3, plastering, boarding, all that. And I go through the stages of a build. And that's in every room. So when I go round, I tick what's needed. Architraves, door, ironmongery, front door, back door. All that's already listed out. So at the moment, so when I go to a property, I've literally got a list of things. Do they need repair, replacement, or whatever, or write notes, and then there's some extras if I haven't been able to put in the scope of works. If it's boarding, there's like the ceiling boarding. If the ceiling needs boarding, then the number, I just tick the checkbox, and the ceiling, so the size of the ceiling that's worked out from the dimension of the room, fills that, and I've got a price list that it drags it in from, and it tells me how much that's going to cost. And I've got a price list for every contractor that I work with. So it pulls their prices into the spreadsheet of depending on who I'm working with. And so basically now I've got a scope of works of everything that needs to be done. I've also got a summary of how much it's going to, an estimate of how much it's going to cost. So I can then judge builders to builder, depending on what they're trying to tell me it's going to cost, if that's the case. I've also then made that spreadsheet give me a timeline, and then I have another master spreadsheet that has all the projects on there, what's kitchens ordered, all the things that need to happen, and it tells me what stage we're at and what stage we should be at as well in the build, depending on the start and end dates and the time that we've agreed with the contractor. And then every week go round and you tick what's completed, and that will tell you how much the contractor is worth, how much the contractor needs to be paid. Now, that's when it gets that's the fun bit, because you agree the prices at the start, they've done the work, they've got wages to pay. And you can imagine, this is like, if you think I was talking about people at the start, oh my God. I mean, this is where it gets, people always, nothing ever gets done on time. Nothing ever gets done in the right order. nothing to me. People leave, people get sacked, people don't turn up. I mean, it's just it's the one. I mean, I am a control freak, but I'm not that much of a control freak to go into the start a property, to start a building company, put it that way. I think that's a really, I think they have a really hard time of it.
So that sounds tough. And interesting how you deal with the refurbs. If you could only keep, changing the subject slightly, if you could only keep one of your companies, which one would it be? And why?
Oh, God.
And then we've got some listeners' questions.
Well, selfishly, it'd be P&M Properties because, I mean, it's my portfolio. It's going to be my pension. So yeah.
In fact, if someone could contact all of Jay's other business partners and let them know that he's decided to sack it all off, that'll save me a job. Well, that makes sense. All right, let's get on to some listeners' questions. Chris simply says, excellent input, Jay. So that's good. Yogesh was first out the gate, as is often the case with, what typical types of properties do you source for clients, and do you have an example of numbers for the last one you sourced, please?
Typical properties are,
we've only got 2 minutes to answer this because we've got quite a few questions.
All right. Typical property, 2-bed terrace. We'd love to make them into 3 beds or an office at the moment for young professionals. It's quite handy. My golden properties I absolutely love from reviewing my portfolio over the last 10 years are 3-bed semis. I mean, I love them. They're the best investment I've made. Properties, range, it's a range of prices, but in South Manchester you're not getting anything under 120, 130 anywhere. And then we will, as long as the numbers fit, then it doesn't matter about the purchase price of the property. But what we try and do is we try and make sure that after we've remortgaged it, there's a 10% cash on cash return. So almost like a 10% net return on your money that you leave in. So if you leave in 20 grand, then you're going to get 2 grand in profit, which if you think of, and it's the way we structure the deal and the way we do it, the process we have, we can get those kind of returns. And that, if you ask anybody, would you like a property that appreciates in capital every year in a really good area that earns you 10% on your money, or even put it the other way around, would you like 10% on your money that's backed by an asset that's going to go up in value in the long term? Possibly it can go down in the short term, caveat, but yeah,
saying the property prices can rise as well as fall.
Yes, that's it.
Very wise, very wise. Never have too many disclaimers. 120, 130, is that knackered price, dilapidated, if you will, or is that presumably dilapidated? Because I don't know where you're buying in South Manchester if that's fully done up.
We can't buy anything that's not dilapidated.
Right, so, okay.
So just, okay. There isn't anything out there that you can add value to at the moment that isn't
I like the fact that one of your main strategies seems to be to buy dilapidated properties, yet you struggle with the word dilapidated quite a lot. That must be difficult on a day-to-day basis.
Just run down.
Yeah, nice. Work around it. Yeah, very sensible. Julie asks, hey, Jay, great talk. You mentioned the properties are brought cash using performance property loan. How does the property make it onto the footballer's portfolio? Is it sold to them at market value after the refurb? I think you touched on this a minute ago, but you can expand if you like.
No. We all the equity, we make a lot of equity for the players, to be honest. And it's, we want to do it the right way. I mean, what we could do if we wanted to make money quickly, then... What I know some other people that work with sportsmen is they go to the developer, let's say it's in town, they agree that I can sell 20 of your properties, and the developer gives them like 7 grand a property back, you know? And so the footballers all get a brand new, spanking new, something they, do you know what I mean? They like new. They're used to new stuff, do you know what I mean? They're used to buying nice stuff. And so it's very attractive to do that. And it's very easy if you wanted to scale a business, because there's loads of them, which is a bad thing. And also that you don't have to do any development, you just got to sell them. So it's a really good work. Well, but for when we started, because I, not just because, but We want to do things the right way, and we want to make sure. I mean, I did it the right way. You take a property, you buy it below market value, and because it even needs refurb, or basically you've got a deal because you've got a motivated seller, and then you add value to it. And then that way, it doesn't matter what the market does, because you've already got a huge cushion, a buffer in there for any bad hiccups or down the road. So that's, we do it the hardest way, but we do it the right way. And the footballers, they get everything that's left in there. So we just have a fixed fee for each property. And then basically the lower we get it, the more that they make. Obviously, we're not getting deals that are like 50% off or anything like that, because the market's so high. So, but they're getting 10% back on their money, and they always get, if we put £1 in refurb, we want to make £2 in equity, £2 in value.
Okay, excellent answer. A combination of question from me and Chris here. Chris says, is the sourcing service open to non-footballers? I'm pretty handy at table tennis. And my question was, I think a similar thing, which was, you talked about a niche. Not Anish Giri, the chess player who's currently involved in the Challengers tournament for the World Championship, but instead Anish, and how you should have one and then really own it. So what's yours? And are the two answer those questions linked? Yeah.
So no, we're not doing table tennis players at the moment. And no, we don't do anything, but I mean, we, at the moment, it's just football players, and it's football players. We haven't got, at the moment, the company is, it's me, Chris, and my PA, Claire. And I mean, so you can imagine we're all flat out. And if you want to provide a really, really good service from start to finish, then there's only so many people you can do that before your service or it starts to deteriorate and you become just bad at things. So it's kind of a closed door at the moment. We're looking for a few more players and that's it. There's obviously a massive driver in Chris, because he's a footballer. He retired. He didn't get any help. He retired through injury, and then suddenly he was 30 years old and didn't have any training and anything, any job. I mean, if you look at the national, I don't want to do a small violin for footballers here, because we all know they earn ridiculous amounts of money, or the top ones do anyway. The other leagues don't actually earn as much. And if you think that they finish their working careers about 30, 35, they've got another, that's only halfway through their working life. And the average wage in the country is £27,000. It's like falling off a financial cliff for them. They've got outgoings up here. They suddenly realise they haven't got any skills, anything like that. Quite a few then, I think it's one in three Premiership players get divorced in the first 2 years. I mean, I'm smiling, but it's like things. And Chris is very, very, that's his community. He really, really wants to help those people. So you can't, like I said, it's a niche. So it works for me and my business brain, but for him as well, we're doing something good, even though we can only help a few people.
Well, it's good. That seems like an excellent way to wrap up. Like Neil, I'll be going out to join my local five-a-side team, see if I can get something together. See if we can get to the right level where we might be of interest. Start whipping on those corners. What have we got? We've got a massive thank you to everyone who attended today and all those listening to the podcast. A special thanks to our speaker, Jade Puddy. Tune in next week when we'll be joined by Richard Daniels, who will be talking through one of his recent case studies, nothing like a case study, and me and business partner Chris will be talking through one of our case studies as well. So a bit of a two-for-one deal next week.